And joining us today on Perspectives is Tess Gerritsen. Tess is a New York Times bestselling author of a variety of thrillers, and she has recently come out with a book called Playing with Fire. And this is a suspenseful thriller about mysterious music and a violent fear of her child. And you're going, wait a minute, what does that mean? Well, we're going to get into that in just a minute. But first, I'd like to introduce you to Tess Gerritsen, Dr. Tess Gerritsen. She went to medical school, and she got her medical degree, University of California, San Francisco, and then while on maternity leave from her work as a physician, she began to write, and in 1987, her first novel was published, Call After Midnight, a romantic thriller. And from there, it just took off, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. Tess, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's good to talk to you again.
Thank you. Now, tell us, I mentioned a little bit about your background and going to school, medical school, but let's talk a little bit about going a little bit further back. When you were a child, have you always been interested in writing?
Yes, I knew I was a writer when I was 7 years old. That's when I wrote my first book about my dead cat. But my parents were doubtful that anybody can make a living in the arts. So they sort of steered me into a science background, and that's how I ended up as a doctor.
And I think last time we chatted, you mentioned something about your dad and his concerns about, I guess, women doing certain things, and also the fact that you needed to have a good career background.
Yeah, you know, I come from an Asian American background, and immigrants in general feel very insecure. It's economically and socially insecure. So science is a way for a lot of Chinese Americans to find their path. That's why we have so many engineers and doctors who are Chinese Americans. And that's where my father wanted me to go. I love science, and I spent a childhood dissecting dead animals in the canyon, so right up my alley, but I always knew that I wanted to be a writer.
And as far as your writing, because there are other writers who have backgrounds in medicine, lawyers, police officers, politicians, but sometimes people get caught up in a niche. Your books are very different. They're not just like, oh, well, here comes another medical thriller.
Yeah.
In fact, this book is a standalone. And the one that I mentioned before that really was the first book that I heard about you because you were on George Norrie's Coast to Coast late at night.
Yeah.
And you talked about gravity.
Yes, I'm all over the board, and this is probably to the despair of my publisher. I write about stories that fascinate me or subject matter that fascinates me, and I was fascinated by the space program, so I wrote the book Gravity. And this one, they weren't expecting. It was not a book that was under contract. It was a book that came out of left field for both them and for me, but here it is. You know, sometimes authors have to step away from the series that they're known for, from the books that they're known for, and write what we authors call the books of our hearts. And these are stories that we really have no choice but to write because they need to be told.
One of the books that you wrote, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it might be a historical novel, and that is, The Bone Garden.
The Bone Garden?
Yes.
Yes, yes. That was another one of those books of your heart, which nobody was expecting. And yeah, that was about the history of medicine. It was about what it was like to be a doctor in 1830, pre-anesthesia and pre-antibiotic therapy. It was a nightmare. It was a nightmare to be a patient. I was so caught up in my research for that story that I knew I needed to write that book.
And when I mentioned historical novel, because it mentions Oliver Cromwell, right?
It's Dr. Oliver Wendell Holmes.
I'm sorry. Gosh, boy, did I get my Olivers messed up there. Okay, yes, and this is the father of the younger one, correct?
Right, the father of the Supreme Court Justice, Oliver Wendell Holmes. The senior Oliver Wendell Holmes, I have a great affection for because he wanted to be a writer, and his dad told him no. So he became a doctor, sort of like me. But the senior Dr. Oliver Wendell Holmes was the first in America to tell his colleague doctors they needed to wash their hands. You know, prior to that, doctors were delivering babies with filthy hands, right, straight from the autopsy room. They would be coming out covered in bacteria, and they killed a lot of women that way. So that was kind of the setting for a mystery novel called The Bone Garden.
And which one, I can't recall, you wrote one, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, again, about the Salem witch hunt.
Well, no, not about the Salem witch hunt. I know what you're talking about. You're thinking of Robin Cook. Robin Cook wrote a book about the Salem witch hunt,
okay.
I believe.
Well, he's another one who we just spoke with him last week, and he had praises for, all of you guys. And in fact, I still have it in my mind when you were talking about your sons and the fact that they don't like your work and that one of your children's friends read your book and he said, dude, your mom's sick.
right. he was reading one of my serial killer books, I'm sure. And, you know, that's unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, that's, I'm known for my serial killer books, but that's not really what I want to be known for. It's, those are the books that the audience gobbles up to no end, and sometimes you just want to step away from things that you're known for. And I'm going to have to say that I understand why Arthur Conan Doyle killed off Sherlock Holmes. He got that up.
And he was another one who started out as a doctor, correct?
Right. But and I think those of us who love what we do also want to love what we're doing. And sometimes if you get burned out, you get tired writing the same thing over and over again.
So on this point, Tess, what about your reader following? Because as you know, a lot of readers get attached to the characters and they really get upset if something happens to them or if they don't think the book turns out the way it should have been. And other authors have mentioned also that the characters are very much alive to you all. And so you kind of let them direct you when you're sitting at the word processor.
Oh, well, I do. I always tell beginning writers who say, I don't know how to start my book, I always tell them, sit down quietly and wait for them to start talking to you. Wait for your character to start talking to you. So they are very real to me in a lot of ways. They are characters who I carry around in my head for a long time. Now, the downside of that is that sometimes I have to get into the heads of evil characters, and that means the evil character gets into my head, and you live with that. But these are all facets of our minds and our personalities. You learn to channel certain voices when you write a story. And the characters, I mean, I do. I have a great affection for them. Like, you know, with this book, Playing with Fire, it took me a long time. In fact, they're still there, but my characters, Lorenzo and Laura, who are the young lovers in the story, they're still with me.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Tess Gerritsen. Her latest novel is Playing with Fire. And as I mentioned before, this is a very unique book, but it's a very Tess Gerritsen, the fact that she's going to take you on all kinds of roller coaster rides, and just when you think something's happening, something else happens. But I love it, the fact that the way you intertwine the stories with the musician who buys the violin in Italy, but then also when you mention Laura and Lorenzo and the fact that you give us the history of Italy and Europe during the World War, if you wouldn't mind kind of sharing with us as far as how much of a research did this take and how did this idea come about?
Well, it did take a lot of research, and it was a nightmare. I had a nightmare in Venice. That's where the story came about, you know, dreaming about playing my violin and seeing a baby sitting next to me turning into a monster. That was the nightmare. And I woke up and I didn't know where that story was going to go. So I went walking that day and I ended up in the old Jewish quarter in Venice. It's a very peaceful, quiet place now, but the plaques that are on the walls there tell a different story. It tells you that even the most beautiful places today can have echoes of horrifying things. And one of the plaques was a wooden plaque set behind a grate. And it had engraved in it the names of every single Venice Jew who was deported from Venice to death camps during World War II. And that was that moment where you just feel something come over you, like a ghost has just walked by and or whispered in your ear and said, this is your story. Your story is here in these names. And I knew that this was the book that I was going to be writing. I didn't know the title, but I knew it was about a woman violinist today who picks up this piece of music and she plays it and her three-year-old goes berserk. She doesn't know why. She wants to know where this music comes from. And her search takes her back to Italy where she comes across this wooden plaque and realizes that this music comes out of the Holocaust. And so there are two different stories being told. There's a story of the violinist today and struggling to regain her sanity after she thinks her three-year-old's trying to kill her. And there's the story of the two lovers in Venice, Lorenzo and Laura, who are both musicians, who both love each other, but history is about to come between them. And the music is what links these two stories. Julia is hearing a long, long delayed echo of Lorenzo's composition.
And it's interesting, that composition, when she starts playing it, she says, and if people are musicians out there and they've encountered, you know, sight reading, whatever, when they look at this piece or she looks at this piece, she finds that it's very difficult and very strange.
It's difficult for a second violinist to play. I'm sheer amateur, so this music is way too difficult for me. But it starts off very quietly and simply. It's a waltz. But within a page, it starts to get difficult and disturbing. It goes way, way up high. And, you know, second violinists are always ridiculed for not being able to get way up high on their E string. That's not where they normally play. And that's where she runs into trouble. And every time it starts to get, like, frantic, that's when things go wrong with her little girl. The other thing about the music that I describe is she feels it's almost evil. There's something frenzied about the music and disturbing about the music. And I describe something that's called a devil's chord. Now, this is what I learned when I was a music student. You know, what makes music disturbing for the human ear is dissonance, and that is two notes that just don't play well together, that set off a harsh ringing in our ears or whatever. So this is what I put into the story. I said that suddenly there she's hearing devil's chords. It's bothering her. The hairs on her arms are starting to rise, and she's feeling really uncomfortable. So that's how we describe the music in the text. What happened as I was working on the book is all this description of music that didn't exist was somehow getting into my subconscious, and I had another dream. While writing the book, the second dream in this whole process, and I woke up with the melody in my head of Incendio, the piece, which is really weird because it didn't exist. But having described it so much, I think I managed to compose it in my sleep. So I composed the entire, it's about 98 bars. The whole thing takes about 3.5 minutes to play. It's way too difficult for me. I did have a friend of mine who tried it out, and she agreed this was definitely a first violinist piece. But when I got this finished piece of music, I sent it to a London music producer who I'd been corresponding with for a couple of years. He got very excited. He said, "This is a beautiful piece. This is something that a number of famous concert stars would be willing to record." And that's how the recording came about.
So the recording is available now?
Yes. The music was played on violin. A 1728 violin, by the way, is what is playing this music on the recording, by a fabulous concert violinist named Suzanne Howe, who has played with 50 orchestras around the world. I sent her the manuscript, and she immediately saw that, you know, this tragic love story. She understood this music was really all about love. It's about a tragic end to a love. And as she was playing it, she said, "You know, I want to add a little piece of my own towards the end." So she adds a very frantic cadenza. A violin cadenza is really just a period where the violin plays solo, because most of the music is piano accompaniment that goes with it. And she recorded a 7-minute version of the entire piece, which is now on iTunes and on Amazon.com.
Now, what about, give us the name of the violin, because the violin also has a big history in the book, and the grandfather has given it a special name.
Oh, yeah, the violin is something that's passed down through the family. The grandfather has called it La Dianora, which is simply the sorceress, because his father had such a hard time playing the violin, he blamed it on the violin. So he just called, you know, she's a witch violin. But this violin, it's important to Lorenzo. This is the part of the story that goes to the end. And I can't tell you what happens to the violin because nobody knows. But the music is what gets passed forward into the future with Julia.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Tess Gerritsen. Tess is the author of the recent book, Playing with Fire. It's a historical, medical, musical thriller, a little bit of everything. And as soon as you start writing, and as soon as I start reading this, when Julia walks into that store, I can feel almost like smelling that musty, the old leather, seeing the books cramped everywhere. And I mean, it's just, you bring the reader into that store, and then when she picks up that book and the music falls out, you just know that, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going to happen, but this doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, there's a little bit ominous about that little violin, that little antique shop. And the music is what links them. And I think the fact that I belong to the tribe of musicians, we consider ourselves a tribe. We have no boundaries. We have no ethnic, you know, we cross all lines. But I just love the idea that I have something in connection with a musician, say, in Italy from 1800. We have a shared humanity through something as simple as a sheet of music.
A lot of times when a reader reads something that an author has put together, it may affect them emotionally. It may take them time to read it because they want to go over it slowly. Or it may be like my daughters have done it, where they read a book over and over again because they love it. And you mentioned that when you were writing this, it brought you to tears.
The thing about Italy is really different. If you look at who died in the Holocaust, 90% of the German Jews perished. I mean, Italy, 80% of Italian Jews survived. They could not have survived, so many could not have survived without the help and the assistance of non-Jewish Italians. And I know I have stories from my research of, you know, just case after case of ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And this is what I found so moving and, I suppose, inspirational, to know that even in the worst of times, people will risk their lives to do the right thing.
And I think a lot of people will say, gosh, I wasn't aware that, you know, there were Jews in Italy, or the fact that they were persecuted, because, as you mentioned, you know, history focuses on the Jews in Germany and Poland. But of course, this whole chapter in our history is very, very dark and is horrifying. And as you mentioned, yes, just it brings tears to everybody. I mean, anyone who doesn't get affected by this is probably not human.
They're sociopathic, I think.
Yes.
But I think the other thing about this story is it reawakens the times. We always ask, how could they not see that coming? How could they not fight back? What was wrong with people? Were they so blind? And the truth is, during the time that this was happening, it was building up very slowly. You just could not imagine what was going to happen. And this is the situation that Lorenzo's family finds itself in, because things are starting to get uncomfortable. But you can't just pick up and leave. Where are they going to go? They've been there for centuries. They have an elderly father who's in a nursing home. Are they going to leave granddad behind? Are they going to leave their businesses behind? Let's just sit here and wait it out. It will get better. I think that's what went through everybody's mind, is it will get better. This is just a temporary thing. The other thing I found interesting was how what came to be. It started off, this whole anti-Semitism started off really in the newspapers. It started off with editorials. Yes, people in the government wanted this to happen, but they had to get the population on board. And the way they got the population on board was to have the cooperation of editorial writers to start saying, oh, the Jews, they're not like us. They're other. They're not loyal. And this is, you know, when you look at this, you think we have to pay attention to what our newspapers are telling us. Is there an agenda that we're not aware of? Because that was happening in Italy.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Tess Gerritsen. Tess is the author of the recent novel, Playing with Fire. And then another interesting point that you bring up in this novel, this book, is the fact that because of the tension, there's also a lot of strife in the family, because Lorenzo and Marco see things very differently.
Yeah, they're the young men in the family. I mean, you look at who did emigrate from Italy during this time, it tended to be young people. Things weren't dragging them down or holding them behind. They thought, well, let's get out of here, and they went. But in a normal family where there's multiple generations, you have multiple concerns. You have to worry about your elderly. Elderly can't be picked up and moved so easily. And you have your homes, you have your businesses. So this is the tension that breaks out in Lorenzo's family. Do we leave or do we stay? And the decisions that the family makes are quite tragic.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Tess Gerritsen. Tess is the author of the novel Playing with Fire. We discussed this before, that because of social media and where we are, books are available just about everywhere now on your iPhone, ebook, Audible, Kindle, but also, as I mentioned, Audible. So tell us a little bit about this book on audio. I would imagine, and that's just me being here in the broadcasting area, that you would hear, readers or listeners would hear this piece in the background.
Yeah, the audiobook has a version of the recording. It's a shorter version. You can hear the music if you get the audiobook. Honestly, I haven't heard the audiobook yet because I haven't gotten my copy.
Okay.
But I think it made it onto the recording, but that's a short version. The actual full-length version that Suzanne recorded on her incredible violin with her beautiful cadenza is something that would have to be downloaded from iTunes.
I mean, this is a compliment, but when I first heard the story and started reading it, immediately I thought, you know, Rod Serling would be very proud of Tess here because this is like a Night Gallery piece. I mean, Twilight Zone, excuse me.
Twilight Zone, yeah. It feels like, well, you know what? They're related, aren't they? Night Gallery and Twilight Zone.
Yes.
But there's a sense that something very spooky and Halloweenish and maybe paranormal is happening. And people have to read the book to find out what the actual explanation is for the little girl's violence.
We are visiting with New York Times bestselling author Tess Gerritsen. Tess is the author of the recent novel, Playing with Fire. In addition to your writing and everything else that you do, you're also very involved in community organizations and community service, and one of those is Alzheimer's.
Yeah, my father died of Alzheimer's, and 5 million Americans are afflicted with Alzheimer's. So just about everyone has either somebody in their family or somebody they know who is dying slowly of this terrible disease. And I was disturbed when I was looking at the amount of money that is put into research, how little there is with a disease that's probably going to bankrupt Medicare and certainly is bringing down the economics of this country and is destroying the livelihoods of families who have to leave their jobs to take care of mom and dad. And I thought, if the government is not putting enough into neurobiology research, we need to step up. So I had a contest a couple of years ago. If you gave money to this Alzheimer's Research Institute, I would enter you in a drawing to name a character in a Rosalie and Giles book.
Ah.
And I matched every contribution, so we gave $50,000 to the Scripps Research Institute in San Diego. And one of the winners said, I want you to name a character after my mother who died of Alzheimer's. I want her to live again. So her name was Millie Jacobson, and she ended up being the main character in my last book, Die Again. She helps Jane and Maura catch a killer. I felt that it was almost a big responsibility to give his mother a wonderful role, and we're doing it again. The contest is online. You can go to my website at tessgerritsen.com, find out how to enter, and it's international. Anybody around the world can enter. And only $5 enters into this contest, and you just might find yourself working with Jane in the next book.
Wow, and you know, this such a horrible disease like cancer does not know any barriers, rich, poor, anyone. And I just finished reading Bill O'Reilly's Killing Reagan, and it's just horrible what President Reagan went through those last 10 years of his life.
It is, and it could happen to any one of us. And no matter what you do, you can't prevent this from happening if you have it. And there's no cure. It's really kind of shocking that with 5 million Americans suffering from this, we have no cure, and we don't seem to really be ready to say we've got this thing conquered. So instead of building another huge expensive bomber, what about giving it to scientists to figure out what's really killing Americans at this moment?
Tess, thank you so much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author Tess Gerritsen. Tess is the author of the recent book, Playing with Fire. And this is about a violin and some strange music that whenever the lady Julia plays it, the little girl turns violent. And the piece, as Tess mentioned, was recorded by Susan Howe, and you can download it from Amazon or iTunes. It's called Incendio, the Incendio Waltz. Thank you so much for being with us, Tess.
Thank you. It was a delight.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Evan Walsh. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.